The cleansing has caused increased state-sponsored repression against Europe's largest Muslim community. A main theme of the march was protecting children. Since October 7th, children as young as 10 years old have been charged with so-called apology for terrorism, while a child of 8 was falsely targeted for praying during recess. Scandals like those have many saying that non-white children are no longer being treated like children, but instead like suspected fanatics, delinquents, and full-grown adults.
We Muslims are enduring so much Islamophobia these days, and it's not like there wasn't a lot of Islamophobia in France already. The targeting of our children is a step too far, and it's incredible that they have taken this shameful step.
As France is accused of targeting Muslim children at home, their elite are giving military and political cover to Israel's mass murder in Gaza of an estimated 15,000 children and the orphaning of some 20,000 others.
On les bombarde.
It's totally unjust how we are watching murder, torture, and the bombing of embassies, and nobody is allowed to say anything. We're here to say, stop the violence against Palestinian and Iranian people.
A decade ago, during another Israeli invasion of Gaza, France became the first country to ever ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations for a month after the counterattack by Hamas on October 7th, handing out hundreds of thousands of euros in fines and making mass arrests. Police initially banned this march, claiming it was a threat to public order and possibly anti-Semitic. That was overturned at the last moment, but many say the effort is proof of a long-running double standard against non-whites and non-Jews.
C'est des antisémites. Ça, c'est n'importe quoi.
Anytime there is a march about Palestine or Islamophobia, the interior minister in whatever administration seeks to ban it. The idea that we are anti-Semitic is total nonsense. I get the feeling that I'm more French than many others who aren't of Algerian descent as I am, because many have totally abandoned the longtime values of French political culture.
Similar to during France's two-year state of emergency starting in November 2015, many have been shocked by the lack of outcry at this latest targeting of the Muslim community, despite perpetual bragging of being the alleged birthplace of human rights. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
After almost 3 days, the Israeli forces withdrew from the refugee camp of Nur Shams near the city of Tul Karim in northern occupied West Bank. Only then paramedics were able to evacuate the martyrs' bodies and the families were able to count their dead. Over a dozen Palestinians have been killed since Thursday, but the number might be higher, as reports suggest that Israeli forces had confiscated the bodies of more martyrs. On Sunday, a comprehensive general strike was declared across the occupied West Bank to mourn Tul Karim martyrs. Scores of Palestinians also held a protest in the center of Ramallah against Israel's escalation and violence in Tul Karim and Nur Shams refugee camp.
Israel is expanding its genocide into the West Bank as well. And as we said before, there is no safe place for any Palestinian. And there has to be immediate Palestinian unity to stand up to this terrible aggression. And there has to be international boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign worldwide. And there has to be condemnation.
It's obvious that the Palestinian people, leadership and factions have to declare an immediate comprehensive popular uprising all over the Palestinian territories until the Israeli occupation ends. The ongoing war of attrition is no longer useful, but what's necessary is a national popular uprising.
The Israeli invasion has caused some of the worst destruction in the West Bank in decades. The occupation forces destroyed infrastructure, including sewage lines, shops, homes, and vehicles. Homes were turned into interrogation centers, and dozens of Palestinians were arrested. According to locals, heavy exchange of fire and clashes took place between resistance fighters and Israeli soldiers during the operation. The Israeli military admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were wounded.
The Israeli occupation regime is escalating its violence against the Palestinian people. Its crimes are meant to exterminate the Palestinian people. In Gaza, genocide is being committed, And here in the West Bank, there are daily incursions, murders, collective punishment, and destruction everywhere. The Israeli occupation is doing its utmost to either bring Palestinians to their knees or commit more aggression and crimes against them.
Sunday's general strike paralyzed all aspects of life in the West Bank, with shops, schools, universities, and banks shuttered. But Palestinians question whether such a standstill is enough, expressing fear that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, the occupied West Bank could be next. The Israeli military's violence against Palestinians is aimed at countering resistance, people here say. This is part of the Israeli crackdown on armed groups in the occupied West Bank. However, Palestinians say the Israeli crimes, including in the Nur Shams refugee camp, have failed to weaken their determination. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
A two-day international forum dubbed What Future for Palestine kicked off in Rome on Saturday. The initiative, organized by an opposition group called Front of Dissent, has been put together to tackle different topics, namely Zionism, its impact on Palestine and West Asia, the nature of Israel, what changes for the Palestinian resistance after October 7, West Asia in its transition to a multipolar world, and the risk of the Ukraine war escalating into a global conflict. The conference was attended by citizens who are very concerned about the turn the situation has taken in Western countries.
Today's forum is an important attempt to break down the wall of silence surrounding Zionist wrongdoings in West Asia. It is appalling how our mainstream media are covering Israel's brutal war in Gaza. They have created a parallel world and a parallel truth with the aim of covering up the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists, and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia, and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region. With the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces, West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and a lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Doctors at the University of California, San Diego's Health Trauma Center have treated 455 patients with serious injuries sustained whilst trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border in 2023. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. A federal judge has sharply questioned the Biden administration's position that it is not responsible for housing and feeding migrant children while they wait in makeshift camps along the U.S.-Mexico border. Recent media reports have shed light on the harsh conditions at sites along the border, where people waiting for processing by U.S. immigration authorities live under open skies, or in tents, or in structures made of tree branches. The camps are often short on food, short on water and sanitation, relying on groups of volunteers to distribute aid and basic supplies. Border Patrol does not dispute the conditions at these camps. Rather, the question at issue is whether these people are in legal custody, which would start a 72-hour limit on how long children can be held and require emergency medical services and guarantees of physical safety, among other things. At a hearing in Los Angeles, California recently, the U.S. District Judge Dolly G said evidence presented by migrant advocacy groups appeared to support the definition of legal custody. She asked, are they free to leave the camp? Fiza Batul, an attorney for the U.S. Justice Department, answered, as long as they do not proceed further into the United States. U.S. District Judge Dolly G, who was appointed by Bill Clinton, acknowledged it was complicated, like dancing on the head of a pin, because some children arrive on their own at the camps and are not sent there by Border Patrol agents. U.S. District Judge Dolly G did not rule after a half-hour hearing. Advocates are seeking to enforce a 1997 court-supervised settlement on custody conditions for migrant children, which includes the time limit and services such as toilets, sinks, and temperature controls. Children traveling alone must be turned over within 72 hours to the U.S. Health and Human Services Department, which generally releases them to family in the United States while an immigration judge considers their case for asylum. Asylum-seeking families are typically released in the United States while their cases wind through the courts of law. The legal challenge focuses on two areas in California, one between two border fences in San Diego and another in a remote mountainous region east of San Diego. When the number of people crossing the border was particularly high last year, they waited for several days to be arrested and processed by overwhelmed Border Patrol agents. From May to December, agents distributed colored wristbands to prioritize who to process first. Migrant advocates say Border Patrol agents often direct people to the camps, sometimes even driving them there. Agents are often seen nearby keeping a loose watch until buses and vans arrive. The Justice Department, which rejects advocates' label of open-air detention sites, says smugglers sent people to these camps. It says agents giving them water and snacks is a humanitarian gesture, and that any agent who sends or even escorts them there is no different than any law enforcement officer directing heightened traffic to avoid disorder and disarray. Brent Schwertfeger, a senior official in the agency's San Diego sector, said in a court filing, Border Patrol generally arrests people at the camps within 12 hours of encountering them, down from 24 hours last year. The agency has more than doubled the number of buses in the San Diego area to 15 for speedier processing. On Friday, 29th of March, 33 people, including two small children, waited between border walls in San Diego until agents came to ask them to empty their pockets, remove shoelaces, and submit to weapon searches before being taken in vans to a holding station. They were primarily from China and India, with others from Afghanistan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, and Georgia. Border agents spoke to them in English. Pedro Rios, a volunteer with American Friends of Service Committee, delivered turkey sandwiches and hot tea and coffee through spaces in the border wall. He gave pain relievers and ointments to a limping Chinese woman who had fallen from the wall. Doctors have seen a startling rise in injuries related to the border wall, with one San Diego trauma center treating more than 440 patients with serious injuries in 2023 alone. Kedian William, a 38-year-old, said she left a 10-year-old daughter with family in Jamaica because she could not afford the journey, including airfare to Mexico, but that asthma would have made the trip difficult for her child anyway. She planned to apply for asylum and settle with family in New York area, having fled her home after family members were killed last year. Kedian Williams said she attempted to reach the camp on Wednesday, 27th of March, but fled back into Tijuana in Mexico to avoid Mexican authorities in pursuit. She tried again a day later, waiting 6 hours on U.S. soil for agents to pick her up for processing. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. Doctors at the University of California San Diego's Health Trauma Center have treated 455 patients with serious injuries sustained while trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border in 2023, a marked increase from the previous year. Alexander Tenorio, a resident neurosurgeon at the University of California, San Diego, who treats brain and spinal cord injuries, said 97% of the injuries, or 441 of them, occurred when people fell off the wall on the U.S. side of the border with Mexico. The figure captures just a part of the number of people injured while trying to cross the U.S.-Mexico border near San Diego. The center is one of two major trauma centers in the region. Migrants with injuries perceived as less severe may not make it to a hospital, and children are not included in the data set. Still, they highlight the extensive and growing human toll of the border crossing. In 2022, the trauma center recorded 311 injuries relating to people scaling the wall. In 2021, it recorded 254 injuries. In 2020, there were 92 injuries, and in 2019, there were 42 injuries. Tenorio said a lot of these patients come with fractures all over their bodies. Unfortunately, and that's what you would expect if someone falls 30 feet from a wall, it's like a three-story building. Dr. Tenorio said the patients arrive at the trauma center with broken limbs, abdominal organ injuries, facial injuries, and spinal fractures. Dr. Tenorio said a lot of these injuries unfortunately don't heal on their own because they're so severe and extensive. He added, a significant number of patients end up undergoing emergency craniotomies or spinal cord surgery. Of the patients who underwent these spinal cord surgeries, Dr. Tenorio said, only 14% came back for a clinic visit, making long-term outcomes difficult to assess. In 2023, Dr. Tenorio said, the center for the first time saw more women than men admitted to the hospital for border-related injuries, including falls.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the heads of Iran's three branches of government and a number of current and former government officials. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on April 3, 2024. We need to appreciate the month of Ramadan. It elevates people in both their human and divine characteristics. The betterment of individuals and society leads to the betterment of society as a whole. There is no doubt about this. When I mentioned there are different aspects, I was referring to fasting, the recitation of the Quran, which has been emphasized and encouraged for this month with people being promised increased reward, beseeching God, reading supplications, and reciting the recommended prayers for this month. Additionally, there is the night of Qadr, which presents an extremely important opportunity because the night of ordainment, Qadr, is better than 1,000 months. The Holy Quran, Chapter 97, verse 3. And there are various other aspects. With regard to fasting during the month of Ramadan develops an individual's ability to resist temptations. This is very important. A person's carnal desires are never ending. They are endless. The more one responds to these desires, the more the cravings and expectations of the human's carnal self increase. It is necessary for a person to have the strength to curb these desires. Fasting gives us this strength. It allows us to practice strengthening our willpower and spirit and also controlling the never-ending desires of our carnal self. This is one way for us to better ourselves.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Reciting the Quran for those who reflect on its meaning refers to connecting to the endless sea of the Islamic teachings. We have a constant need to be able to strengthen divine understanding in our hearts and to raise the level of our understanding and insight. In the verse, to him ascends the good word. Quran, chapter 35, verse 10. A major part of this good word is the understanding that enters the human self from the Quran. The supplications that have been recommended for the month of Ramadan at Sahar, the time before the morning call to prayer, during the nights, during the days, on special days such as the first day of Ramadan, etc., immerse the human heart in the remembrance of God. If a person pays attention to these supplications, it will lead to one building zikr, God's remembrance, in him or herself, and a connection with God in a suitable way.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Mass murder after mass murder describes the reality of what the Israeli regime is committing on a daily basis in Gaza. Since October, the U.S.-Israeli genocide has claimed over 34,000 victims, and the number is most likely over 40,000. As hard as it is to believe, some of the worst atrocities have been committed in places that are usually off limits during war, but obviously that is not the case with this Holocaust against Palestinians. Hospitals, that's right, hospitals, have been one of the favorite targets of the regime. Why? Stay with us as we take a look at this and more on this spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. And David William Parrott, academic author and journalist out of Scotland. Well, thank you both for being with us. I'm going to start this off with Charlotte. Charlotte, hospital after hospital in Gaza has witnessed major destruction and harm. Mass murder, torture, and arrests have taken place at these facilities. Why do you think that hospitals have been one of the main targets of the Zionist regime in Gaza?
When you think about genocide, what we're fundamentally talking about is an attempt to exterminate a population, to rid an area of its people, of its population. And so this genocide in Palestine, of course, we've seen the horrendous crimes of the past 6 months against the Palestinian people in Gaza, but there's been a Zionist genocide against the Palestinian people for over 75 years now. And of course, if you want to take away people's right and ability to live, if you want to take away the fundamental parts of infrastructure that enable people to survive, that enable people to recover from the damage inflicted by this war machine that targets the most vulnerable, people with disabilities, elderly people, children and infants, then what do? You target hospitals and you target healthcare facilities. And what we have seen has been the systematic and deliberate targeting of hospitals and healthcare facilities while engaging in an international propaganda campaign to supposedly legitimize the targeting, bombing, besieging, and destruction of Palestinian healthcare facilities throughout Gaza. We saw it at Al-Shifa Hospital through two sieges, two series of attacks, two series of mass arrests, two series of mass graves. We saw it at Al-Nasser Hospital. We're seeing it at Al-Awda Hospital now, which was once again targeted just yesterday in Nusayrat camp. All of this is meant to make Gaza unlivable. It is meant to make Palestinians die or force them to leave their land. And One of the things that has really just stood out is the incredible bravery of Palestinian healthcare workers in resisting this genocide.
Yeah, really. Well, David, mass graves have now been discovered in the yard of the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, and the bodies of 283 medical staff, patients, and refugees who were taking shelter at the hospital have been discovered. I mean, shouldn't there be extreme outrage throughout the world, at least when doctors and patients have been targeted?
Do you know your question almost beggars belief? I mean, the situation almost beggars belief. Firstly, let me do some polite protocols. It's a pleasure to meet Charlotte. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you for coming.
The pleasure is mine. You know, I'm not sure I'm the right person, to be honest. I'm a lifelong peacenik, a pacifist through and through, who's, I suppose, used to other types of engagement. You know, this type of warfare is something new to me, and I'm not claiming to be any type of expert on Sun Tzu or, you know, how warfare is waged. But when hospitals are targeted, I mean, there was a big hoo-ha in the international press at the start. Were they being targeted or not? I think it's quite clear to see now that they are, and it's unacceptable, really. You know, even if some of these facilities are being used, you know, with the intention of shielding fighters, and again, that's questionable. I don't think in this day and age that's an excuse. There are ways to find that out. There are ways around those problems. Any war on civilians is an outrage. It's terrible. You know, I'm here this evening to speak for peace, the ordinary Palestinian, and maybe also the ordinary Israeli, you know, who have been drawn into this situation. And everybody seems incapable of getting us out of it. I don't believe it myself. I think with a bit of goodwill and initiative, remembering the values that we all share, you know, I think humanity can reassert itself before it's too late.
Okay, well, Charlotte, I mean, when we look at the absolute absence of humanity by the Zionist regime, I mean, do you think that part of the barbarism we're witnessing is due to its total military and intelligence failure on October 7th and since then?
I think that's absolutely the case. What happened on the 7th of October was that the Palestinian resistance, I mean, in ways that built upon what the Lebanese resistance had done before, in ways that built on Palestinian resistance that has been ongoing throughout the history of Zionist colonization in Palestine, was show the possibility that the Palestinian armed resistance had the capacity to defeat the so-called undefeatable Zionist army, and that there was the potential to imagine a Palestine that was free of Zionism and a region that was free of U.S. imperialism. That is what happened on October 7th. All of the outrage, all of the shouts and screams, not only from the Zionists, but from, you know, world officials, you know, U.S. President Biden, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Olaf Scholz of Germany, Macron in France, all of these imperialist powers denouncing and decrying October 7th in the strongest of terms. I mean, because of the fact that October 7th was presenting material manifestation of the fact that, in fact, the Zionist project can be defeated. And that defeat that looks closer than ever. And the freedom of Palestine looks closer than ever. And so the Zionist regime and the imperialist powers responded the way that they always do to a rising of people seeking justice and seeking freedom from years of exploitation and domination. And that is through genocide, bombing, and massacres of civilians. They have not effectively targeted, nor have they effectively undermined the Palestinian resistance and its military capacity. They are not capable of stopping the resistance in Lebanon. They're not capable of stopping it in Yemen, and they are certainly not capable of stopping it in Iran. And they are instead attempting to win a pseudo victory through massacring civilians and bombing hospitals, schools, mosques, churches, and residential buildings. But of course, this is no victory at all. The humanity of the world is being defended by those who are part of the camp of resistance in the region and around the world. And it is in those examples, in the Palestinian resistance fighters and the people of Yemen stopping the ships from resupplying genocide, in the Lebanese resistance emptying northern Palestine of soldiers and settlers, and of course in the retaliatory actions by Iran that are actually defending humanity against the rapacious attacks of Zionism and imperialism today.
Okay. Well, David, the first operation on a hospital during this genocide in Gaza was at the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital back in October. Now, during that onslaught, initially the regime tried to deny that it committed the crime. Now, so many hospitals have been targeted, and it doesn't even bother trying to explain the horror it is creating. I mean, what does it say about the regime in general and about the progression of this genocide?
Zionism's a strange beast in all sorts of ways. You know, I wonder if we're looking at the various rafts of Zionism coming apart, religious Zionism, political Zionism, which of course does not represent all the people of Israel and indeed all of the views that come out of Israel. I can't get over the fact a hospital was targeted in the first place. I remember reeling with shock when I first heard that news. In the evening, I posted it on my social media immediately saying, what has the world come to? I lost a couple of friends, Jewish friends. I hadn't accused anybody of anything at that particular time. And you think, you know, there are standards, common human standards, standards of decency that we throw away at our peril. I mean, it strikes me at the moment that international law is collapsing around our ears. You know, the order and structure of things after World War II, which was rightly put in place to try and make us all just a little more civilized, is literally coming apart at the seams. As you said yourself a minute ago, hospitals, churches, I mean, where does it all stop? We can't weaponize everything and remain human. I mean, one of the interesting facts I think about Zionism is, of course, there was an influx of Russian Zionists not too long ago. I don't think they're the most faith-driven people in the world. I mean, I remember seeing some interviews, reading about some interviews where they actually laughed at the idea of faith in Israel. Forgive me for painting in such broad brushstrokes. I don't have the figures and names in front of me, though I can get them. You know, and you think, well, okay, what is left if you're not fighting for that type of Israel? You're fighting for something artificial, and you're fighting for something that really has little mercy on the surrounding people. I mean, I've had friends in Palestine for years. A friend of mine was the wife of a vicar. They all lived in Palestine together. I can't remember the book she wrote offhand. It was charming. You know, how before the State of Israel was established, everyone would go to each other's church, each other's mosque, each other's synagogue, and celebrate the seasonal rites together. All that has fallen apart, and now we're going to a new level of hospitals being attacked, sacred sites being attacked, graveyards being cleared. For me, I suppose that's one of the ultimate signs that humanity's gone out the window, the complete rubbing away of somebody's culture. It can't continue. What surprises me most is the aggression, I suppose, on the part of America and its proxy Israel in this particular instance. You know, there's a belligerence that I haven't known for a long, long time. It's depressing to see, and the complete lack of willing to discuss these issues is absolutely terrifying. You know, you're either for us or against us. The whole Biden regime, you know, that man can't get his head out of 1950s America. The world has moved on. You're either for us or you're against us. This simply isn't human. It's not rational, and it won't lead to peace. If I've got anything to say this evening on your wonderful show, is that we've got to find ways to reach peace. Further killings, further murders, further atrocities will not help anybody. And that's my view.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Charlotte, I mean, the regime has not reached any of its military goals in Gaza, nor was its intelligence able to prevent the Hamas October 7th operation. I mean, what does this say about the true abilities of the regime? Because it always tried to portray this invincibility in the region and throughout the world.
I think it shows that, you know, the Zionist regime is not invincible. The Zionist regime has never been invincible. It has relied on the weaponry provided by imperialism and its backing and support by Britain, the United States, France, Germany, etc., in order to maintain an image, a false image of dominance in the region. And that dominance has been established purely by having access to weaponry and technical support. I mean, we just saw the United States Congress voting to send another $26 billion in weaponry to the Zionist war machine carrying out a genocide. But the Palestinian people are the indigenous people of the land, rooted in the land, refusing to give up, refusing to bow down. I mean, the heroic action of October 7th was a statement that the Palestinian people will not be imprisoned, will not be subject to siege, and that Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. That's not just a slogan, but that's a reality. And that reality is going to be accomplished by all means that are necessary, including and led by the armed resistance, and in alliance with all of the resistance forces and peoples in the region. And this is something that is becoming more and more clear. And so we're seeing this absolutely genocidal conduct and targeting of every aspect of civilian life by a wounded beast, a regime that knows it has no future in Palestine and it has no future in the region. And October 7th was only the beginning of a new era of Palestinian revolution. It was only a manifestation of the fact that the balance of power in the world is changing, and that massacring civilians en masse and carrying out mass executions and the slaughters of children and healthcare workers and people is not going to maintain this unjust, illegitimate colonial settler project in occupied Palestine. It's simply not going to be able to do so. And they're not going to be able to rely on their weaponry in order to do so. Every single weekend, we see millions of people around the world in the streets for Palestine. Right now, we're seeing some of the most prestigious university campuses in the United States, where there is a student uprising going on, an occupation of campus, saying that we're not going to stop doing this until this university divests from the Zionist regime. This is a manifestation of the fact that people, even the people of the imperial court, do not want to be associated with Zionism, do not want to be associated with racism, do not want to be part of this war machine anymore. And so it's up to us to continue to take action to support those who are making those changes on the ground, led by the resistance forces, in order to bring an end to this genocide and bring an end to these crimes against humanity. There's a reason why the Columbia occupation and the Gaza Solidarity Encampment is getting so much support, because it's showing that every sector of society is done with genocide, done with Zionism, okay, and it has no future.
Well, David, what about Charlotte's comments? Because it just seems, you know, when we look at just basic humanity, after watching this, it's almost been now 200 days. Tomorrow will be the 200th day since this genocide has begun, that people, normal people, just cannot take looking at this and tolerating this day after day. And that's why we're seeing more and more actions in university campuses. Even people take the risk of being suspended from the university, losing their jobs. But I feel that growingly, just everyone is willing to do whatever they can, and they feel responsible to be able to try to do something to stop this genocide. I mean, your thoughts on that side of things?
You have to remember that huge marches are taking place across the United Kingdom every weekend at the minute to put a stop to this perceived inhumanity. You know, what am I perceiving personally? The shades of colonialism, the shades of racism, you know, all the things that dragged Europe down from its quite glorious heritage at one point. All of those old nasty colonial attitudes that are creeping into the discourse, creeping into attitudes, and, you know, we have to extricate ourselves from that, because it's done by a ruling elite in Britain, and maybe elsewhere too, that have vested interests in keeping the status in the quo, which of course isn't working. Despite what the Prime Minister says, a lot of people are very angry and very upset, you know, and they know. I mean, I can barely myself watch the images on TV. I can hardly look at them. But I know from some journalist friends of mine that they, you know, these are watered down images. They're not really showing the horror of the realities. You know, a young mother, a young lady with half of her hand shot away, a young toddler, you know, 3 years old, holding his tummy to keep his innards inside. And I remember saying to my journalist friends a couple of weeks ago, well, you know, obviously there are certain protocols, there are certain ways of dealing with reportage, but why isn't any of that being shown here? And they said they don't know themselves. And it's almost like there's a manipulation. Maybe there is a manipulation on what can be said and the way it can be said on the part of media outlets.
Mm.
You know, the idea was, I mean, I'm sorry for going on too long. You know, was a couple of complaints by my friends, who'd better remain nameless at the moment, were sent in to some very senior journalists heading certain departments at the BBC, and getting the message back, this isn't evening time viewing, this isn't viewing for ordinary folks when they're having their supper. I can barely believe the inanity and the inhumanity of that as a response. But that is what is happening here. The careful management of a situation and what we learn and what we hear about the atrocities.
Right. Well, of course, Charlotte, I mean, what David's mentioning is something that has been going on for decades as far as manipulating public perspective. But we don't have very much time. I just want to go to the next question. The head of the Israeli military intelligence has been forced to step down due to the failure of the regime on October 7th. Now, his resignation is the first of what is likely to be a long list of forced resignations or firings. Your thoughts about that, Charlotte?
One of the things that we've seen is that one of the reasons why Netanyahu is determined to keep this genocide going is because he doesn't want to be held accountable for the fact that he and his fascist government oversaw one of the greatest military defeats that the Zionist regime has suffered in the past 75 years. He doesn't want to take accountability for that, and he doesn't want to take accountability for the fact that every single day the Palestinian resistance is continuing to snipe their soldiers and destroy their tanks, and despite all of their genocidal TikToks that they post, the Zionist military is not achieving victory. In fact, it's being defeated every day by the Palestinian people and their resistance, and for that matter, by Yemen and Lebanon, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and all of the forces of resistance in the region that are coming together to expose the weakness. As they say, that the Zionist regime is like a spider's web. Its weakness is being exposed every single day, and they want to hang on to their power with genocide, bombings, and war crimes, and it's up to us to do everything that we can to make sure that they're not able to get away with that.
Well, David, I mean, from so many aspects, the regime seems to be imploding economically, politically, militarily. How do you see it?
It's certainly being propped up by America at the minute, which is outrageous. And, you know, it's got to this stage in America, according to my contacts, that even to side, you know, with the downtrodden, even to side with your ordinary Palestinian now makes you tantamount to a terrorist. I mean, this is ridiculous. I was being told the other day by some friends of mine who were protesters over there, humanitarians and pacifists, that all they were doing was going up to senators on their way to their offices, maybe, you know, representatives, and saying, what are we doing as American citizens to bring some balance and to bring some sanity into this situation? And they were told they were terrorists. You know, they were Islamic terrorists, they were Palestinian terrorists. I mean, the first thing we have to do is bring proportionality back into what we're saying to each other, a little bit of sanity into each other, and I can't, you know, with each other, I can't help feeling really that's one of the things that the right-wing regime of Netanyahu really doesn't want. I agree 100% that its failings and its weaknesses are being exhibited every day now. But, you know, the almighty power of America is going to keep it going for a very long time unless enough people say enough is enough and we start seeing things in their true light. You know, human beings are suffering without any real need. They're being starved. Malnutrition is being weaponized. Aid isn't getting through.